Hello, everyone. We're so glad you are here. This is Hilde Gottlieb, and my business partner, Dimitri Petropoulos, is on the line.
Hello, this is Dimitri, and welcome, everyone.
And Rick Carter from Lincoln, Nebraska. Rick, say hi.
Hello.
And Elizabeth Sadlin.
Hi, everyone.
It is so nice to have everybody here and to be surrounded by Elizabeth and Rick and Dimitri today to chat with you guys about community-driven consulting. Many of you know that we asked for questions at LinkedIn and on Twitter and on Facebook and from our own groups of consultants who've already started taking the Institute's courses to just get a sense of, well, what would you want to know? And so we have tried to build today's class around what you want to know. If you've got additional questions as you're going along here, you can send an email to teleclass@communitydriven.org, and that will be in the notes that you got in your email. This class is also being live tweeted on Twitter, so if you want to ask questions via Twitter, you can use the hashtag #CDConsult, or you can just direct message Community Driven. So we're going to do our very, very best to get to all of your questions in the next 90 minutes. It's going to be interesting to see how we do. What we do not have time to answer, we will add to the FAQ at the communitydriven.org site. The four of us know that we could talk the whole 90 minutes about just one of your questions. So if you hear us reining each other in, the four of us have worked together for quite a while now, and we're pretty good at reining each other in, so it'll be fun to watch how we do that. But these issues just get us so jazzed that we tend to sort of jump in with all of our thoughts. And so we all have vowed and promised to be on our best behavior, but we'll see how we do with that. What I think would probably be a good start is for us to just sort of introduce ourselves a little bit and tell you how we got to this work and how we came to this. And I'll dive in first and get me out of the way, because most folks have already heard a bit of the history of how we started in this work. Dimitri and I started our consulting practice back in 1993, focusing entirely on community organizations. And after about 5 years of doing this work, we just sort of had the epiphany that we were doing everything you were supposed to be doing. We were obviously doing it well enough that all our work was coming in by referrals and word of mouth. And yet we weren't seeing communities change from all of that work. And so the thing that has driven us for the past going on 11 years now is that whole question of, if this is the sector that was supposed to change the world, how come the world hasn't changed? And because our background was in business turnaround, I really think I've been thinking a lot about that lately and realizing what a big plus that was for us, because we knew how to bust things apart and put them back together so that they would work, and that's our inclination. Dimitri used to reassemble Volkswagens in his living room. So
yes, I had to always tie my ponytail, which I really didn't have, but you just picture that in your imagination. Make sure it didn't get caught in the fan belt.
So we would naturally put things back together, and that's really what we wound up doing. We wound up ripping apart just about everything to say, how could we aim all the work we're doing at creating more visionary change in our communities? So we were doing the same work everybody else is doing right now. We were doing strategic planning and thinking it was making a difference. We were doing governance and thinking it was making a difference. And the thing that drove us was the sudden realization that there's got to be a better way. We've got to be able to create more visionary change. We have since been in the process right now of creating the Community Driven Institute as a separate tax-exempt organization, a community benefit, a global benefit organization, so that it will be its own learning and research organization to just learn and teach and keep fomenting these ways of doing our work that create more visionary change. Do you want to add anything, Dimitri, before we...
Well, I also wanted to mention that we had the good fortune and the accident of starting our own nonprofit during the course of all this. So
I started a community benefit organization. What did you start?
I started the, it's called the Diaper Bank, the Southern Arizona Community Diaper Bank, where it served as our laboratory for a long time to take a lot of the breaking apart and putting together that we were doing. And in the initial stages, we had something to experiment with and to see, why was this working, why is this not working? It was a blessing and a lot of work, and sometimes I pull my hair out, but I can't say how happy I am that we did that. So in addition to the work that we were doing with clients, we were also our own client at that
time.
Rick, Elizabeth, do you want to jump in and talk? First, introduce yourself and tell a little bit about your own consulting work so that folks understand where you're coming from. And then what drew you to taking a community-driven approach and working with us on this stuff? Whoever wants to go first, dive in.
I'm Elizabeth Badlon. Great to be with everyone. I have been an independent consultant to community benefit organizations for about 12 years after doing a sector switch and after having worked within several organizations, community-based organizations. Early in my this career, I remember reading Hildy's practical posts on Charity Channel and being drawn to her, and then as now she's kind of leading me in understanding the way that technology can help us connect with each other. And a lot of what I read hooked to some of what I was feeling and thinking. And when I went through a strategic planning process along with some colleagues for our own work, I figured we might as well apply it to ourselves, I realized that really important in my own considerations and decisions is the question that I always like working with clients on is, so what? I do a lot of measurement work and a lot of planning work with organizations that, you know, include funders as well as direct service providers, and I'm always pressing for the so what? So you did all of this, what difference did it make? And when I applied that to my own work, similarly to the way that Hildy and Dimitri founded, it was like I wanted to make sure that everything that I was doing was not only ending up with people feeling very happy about a process or getting a fabulous document or a plan or completion of some checklists, but that it actually had some sustainable difference in changing the world, because that is why I do this work and feel so fortunate to be able to. So over many, many years of connecting with Hildy and Dimitri and sharing information and learning together, I've been hooked and have found ways that it has really become integrated into the work that I'm doing, and I'm excited to share some of those, but also hear from on an ongoing, you know, longer-term basis in this learning community, learn from each other about how this really integrates into your work. And also, as now a board chair of a community benefit organization, I'm using it in lots of other ways.
Well, that's right, you're using it on a board as well. I'd forgotten about that.
Yes, right, yeah.
My turn. My name's Rick Carter. I'm with an organization called the Human Services Federation, which is an association of community benefit organizations in Lincoln, Nebraska. And what brought me to this work is kind of a long path through political consulting and work in government that landed me in the community benefit world. And as I looked around at working with organizations, and part of what we do with the Federation is, you know, the wonderful word of capacity building was the talk always around capacity building. One day in working with one of our member agencies, the word capacity building came up, and we moved it to a discussion of how do we stop talking about individual nonprofit capacity building and look at how do we change the capacity of our community to really benefit all of us and to create community impacts. And through that discussion led to some work with some really visionary funders in Lincoln here that had been exposed to some of Hildy's work. And we brought Hildy to Lincoln about, I don't know, 4 years ago, Hildy? Is that close for the first time?
Yeah, maybe. It may have been a little bit less, but yeah.
And from that point on to actually hear somebody that made me say, I'm really not alone out here in some of the ways we're looking at these things, and have been welcomed into a great community of consultants and community-driven-minded individuals that has made me feel more and more energized and inspired every day by the work that we can create. So I'm glad to be here, and thanks everybody for joining us.
It really has been energizing to have this community, and this community is growing, which is so much fun, to have other folks learning with us, because we don't pretend, as I say in the book, I don't pretend to have all the answers. We know that the most important thing we can be doing is changing some of the questions that we're asking. Changing some of the thinking that we're doing, some of the reflexive thinking that we're doing. And it sort of leads to one of the questions, one of the bigger questions that folks had when they were asking their questions via LinkedIn and via Twitter, which is, how does community-driven consulting really differ from the, quote, nonprofit consulting that I'm already doing? And I'm not sure that It's an interesting question. We've sort of ruminated on this quite a lot and spent a lot of time talking about it, because what we immediately reflexively go to is, what do I need to do differently? And as hopefully folks listening will start to understand, that the most important thing is not so much what we do differently, but how we think about our work differently and how we think about where we are in that work and what the end result of that work would be. And so it comes to a question, for instance, of we're really used to in strategic planning what those steps would be and what the goals would be, but maybe the different question becomes, how can I help this group create a plan, just as an example, that aims them at creating visionary change in their community? And so what we found is it really, in my thinking of how this differs from the work that Dimitri and I were doing 10 years ago, is that for everything we do now, whether it's resource development or governance or planning, we're aiming that work at asking that question, how is this going to create more visionary change in the community? And you know, we give case studies throughout the book on showing that difference. But I know that both you guys, Rick and Elizabeth, have had experience looking at that differently. Rick, do you want to share some of what you've been doing?
Sure. And I think part of it, too, is it's not always about changing the way that you're doing things. I think a lot of people on this call are probably doing some of these things. In a lot of areas, it's knowing that there are others out there who've been thinking about this in the same context and in the same frames that you've been thinking about it. And I think one of the values that I've learned in the Community Driven Institute is to learn you're not alone out there, and that there is this group of visionary people who are all looking at things differently and trying to talk about things differently. And just to have that as a resource as well is one of the big parts of all of this. I value that about both Elizabeth, Hilde, Dimitri, and everybody else I've met through this. One of the things in the planning is, I think we all face that difficulty of, and as having done strategic planning with organizations, for doing it myself with my organization, it's oftentimes how often we see the means becoming the ends within organizations. And for me, it was about, How do we change that focus to really being ends focused, and what is that visionary impact? And from the smallest organizations, I think Hilde has used this example, an organization that I had worked with at one point that was working with inmates that are on death row, becoming so focused on the idea of what they had to do and the means of providing for inmates, whether it be a typewriter ribbon, and that becoming the focus of discussion, and forgetting to pick their heads up and go, what we're really out about is stopping capital punishment in wherever. A big part of this is, how do you lift organizations, how do you help organizations lift their own heads up and look around at their community and say, how are we creating this visionary impact?
It's a wonderful image, the looking up.
Absolutely. And I think about how it can happen over time. When I think about what's different and changing, this is a continuous process. I think it's very clear to me, and I think we've talked about this in our CDI groups, that there isn't a moment when you've arrived and you are now golden CDI, but this is continuous, and that's why I'm so grateful to have this community of practice together. But as I'm changing the way that I do my work in conversations, I'm finding that I'm able to model the questions that we want to ask, and that people then within organizations, my client organizations, start having those shifts themselves. And one group that I'm deep in doing planning with right now, we started off the process, and we've been working together for several months. This is strategic planning, so we did a lot of community engagement and input from various groups and steps that we see in traditional strategic planning processes. But the question that I started with in every stage group, whether it's staff, whether it's residents in this affordable permanent supportive housing group, whether it's community partners, or the folks out there who are a little bit hesitant or even resistant about the work that this organization is doing, every conversation started with, what would success look like in this community? Mm. And some people in those conversations got it, and they completely had a vision and they could talk about it. Other people were stuck and they'd say, what community? What you mean? What does success look like for that organization? And it's always pulling back to, no, our purpose here isn't making the organization successful for the purpose, this is the means and ends of making the organization successful. It's how do we change the community. And two of the key staff I've been working with shared this aha later in the process when they said, this is so different from what I expected the process to be. And it's wonderful. We are always so wrapped up in asking the hows. Where are we going to build our next project? How are we going to fill in the blank? And instead, this is all about why. And that why has helped them connect in a long-term way. And we'll talk in a little while about doing planning and living in a very uncertain time. Add that to this group does a lot of stuff in real estate. Extremely challenging. And to be able to look up and say, you know, raise your head up and say, where are we headed in the long term? We will make good decisions in the near term based on what we can, but we at least know where we're headed. And it also helps the community members be really engaged with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, community members don't really care about your organization. They care about their community. And, you know, some community members will care about your organization, and clearly, like, the executive director's mom will care about the organization. But most community members just care about their community, and you're giving them a place to
connect. The executive director, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, you also had a really interesting, I was loving the story you were telling me a couple of weeks ago about some interviews, Elizabeth, that you were doing in the community where you were asking, you were doing some values work with a group, and instead of just focusing internally, you were asking the community what values they thought you guys were modeling. Could you share that? Because I love that story.
You know, this is a great example of how my work with CDI has helped me become stronger on my feet and in the real moment. And it's an example of how this isn't a technique, it's a philosophy. Because I actually didn't go in asking the values question. I was in a group discussion, leading a group discussion. We were talking about, you know, what does the community look like, and then we were talking about the organization's role in making that change. And someone in the community focus group said something about the values that this organization expresses. When I see them working, this is the value that I see. And for me, because of the work that we've been doing together, that was a little aha. And I said, and I decided that is a path we are following. So we developed a values list from the external perspective first so that the community was saying, this is what we see you as. And it was really surprising. It was wonderful to see the staff and the board's reaction to this list. And it really was a unique list that really doesn't describe just any organization. It clearly was about them. And it was very comforting and supportive to the organization, especially those leaders who often get beat up. They feel like out there doing the good work, they feel like they're not getting a lot of recognition for the good stuff and the values they hold. It also opened up some extremely powerful conversations within the staff and within the board about how do we live these values. So we took the list of what the community sees. We said, which ones do we really truly want to be living, and where are the things that are missing that we want to have there? Use that as a place to begin, but then really created the list of who we want to be and how we want to do
our work. So what the community was giving you then was what they thought, what values they thought you were modeling, what it appeared
to
them?
Expressed. Yeah, in the work that the organization does, it's the values that they seem to be living.
Wow.
And that was a way, and it really opened the eyes, first of all, to the community is really paying attention to what's happening here and the way they do their work. But it also helped them have conversations about how do we internalize that, because it helped them raise some recognition of places that there were values that they weren't yet living and expressing externally that they wanted to, or internally. So it was
really important, talking about expressing internally, and it's something that you touched upon earlier, that people are feeling this, but not expressing it across organizations and across the sector. And that having the opportunity to be in an environment where they can talk about this and that they can share it really creates a kind of energy and a kind of synergy that the potential has been there for that, but had never been actuated before. I think that's a great example of that.
Well, and it's the example of, I mean, we all talk about engagement, and you know, we hear organizations say, we have to be more engaged in our community, but it is back to that idea and the philosophy of modeling the behavior. And Elizabeth, that's a great example of, talk about modeling engagement from the most basic piece, is how great to go to the community and say, what do you think our, you know, values are? And I mean, it's a whole different way to really show engagement and to be engagement as opposed to just saying engagement. And I think that's one of the real values with this. I mean, I agree with Hildy that I believe the biggest myth that exists out there is that if we just had a better marketing plan, we'd be a better organization. Because that's what we hear from organizations all the time. If I just had a marketing budget and a communication budget that I could tell everyone about what I do, everyone would love me. Well, maybe some people would love you more and some people that may not be aware of you, but I'm not exactly sure where the value is. But if you truly model engagement, those that do, and you will identify those in the community who do care passionately about your organization, will feel engaged in your organization and will be engaged in what you do. And I
because they're engaged with your mission, right, because they care about and they're passionate about the mission and the work
exactly,
that you're
doing. Exactly right. And I think it is all about that.
It's been interesting. One of the other differences of you know, how does this differ from what we were traditionally doing? A lot of what Dimitri and I were traditionally doing 10 years ago included marketing because we're really good at marketing. And we would ask those classic marketing questions that include, how are you going to differentiate your work from the other crisis nursery down the street? We get that question all the time in fundraising, which is, how are you going to convince donors they should give to you and not the other organization? And that's what marketing engenders. So ironically, are teaching people to do the very thing that we're complaining that they do. We're teaching them to compete better, and then we're complaining when they compete. And what engagement does is it makes it all us. We're all working together, and that combination of the vision for what the community can be, and I think that's a really big piece of it as we're talking about it, is that the mission is really what you do, but the vision is what we can all be together as a community, and that's something that you're right, Rick, people want to engage about.
Yeah, and that's just it. We can compete over what we assume are scarce resources forever, mm-hmm. or we can engage with one another and really talk about solving community problems. And I think there's a difference in how you approach those things. And it's a profound difference. And it's mm-hmm. by engaging with one another and looking at a vision for a community that solves this problem, why not shoot for that vision? And I think that is really the heart of engaging with not only a community, but other organizations that do similar work, and to engaging mm-hmm. consultants and others and stakeholders in a community, and really being engaged and modeling engagement that way.
Well, you have something that you share with them, and it's something that becomes stronger because you share it. The more you share it, which is what you want the community to be, it's no longer about just the organization. Because when you're dealing with the classic marketing imperatives as to how to differentiate yourself, and the purpose of differentiating yourself is because you want to be the one that's successful, and in many cases, over somebody else who's doing the same thing you are. And it's a total mind shift to think that what makes me successful is to make them successful, because success for us is the change that we make in the community, the vision that we share, and the power that we have doing that.
And I think it's just really important to be clear as we're talking, because the four of us have worked together and learned together over time. And I think it's important to touch back to folks who are listening for the first time that this is not about exchanging one tool for another. It's not about exchanging marketing for community engagement. Okay, now I need this bag of tricks. That it really is about transforming who we are in the world and how we perceive that and how we look at that and what road we're walking. Because it's really easy to just get caught in that, okay, if I can just, the old line that you hear at workshops, if you just learn two new things today and try them, I'll be happy and have done my job. And for us, if all you learn is two new tricks and get out there and do them, then we've failed miserably. What we're really talking about is, for instance, how do we change our thinking as consultants from problem solving to creating extraordinary communities? And what does that mean in our strategic planning? What does that mean in how boards govern? What does that mean in how we react to circumstances in the community rather than create the future of the community? It comes back down to that whole issue of vision versus mission. And I really like, I mean, you guys have all been talking about that whole image of looking up. Mission being what we do focuses us, and we're always told that we should focus on our core competencies and focus on what we do well. when, quite honestly, that might not be what the community really, really needs, and especially might not be what we need to be in order to create extraordinary change. And again, that's been the focus of community-driven work, is how do we create extraordinary change? And the only way we do that is that image that you guys keep talking about, which is looking up from our desks, looking up from the day-to-day, looking up from the immediate problem that needs to be solved, and looking out towards the future that we want to create for the community, and linking arms with folks who want to create that same kind of transformation. So I just feel the need to repeat that it's not about the tricks and the tools.
Well, I'm just thinking of how connecting, Rick, what you were saying about scarcity and all of the looking up and thinking forward and thinking about the world today and where, you know, how many times have we received invitations, been on a panel or gone to a session on surviving the turmoil. This is a really very challenging time that we haven't experienced in this way before, that is truly creating situations within organizations and families and in individual lives that are very difficult, and that I'm finding that it's extremely helpful to have a community-driven approach in those conversations and to be able to do the looking up and to be able to recognize that, and it's happening naturally, it's very interesting, that a lot of organizations are now saying, oh my gosh, I need to connect with that person over there. One organization I'm working with is, well, if nothing else happens in the next few months, we are going to connect with those people who we want to have on our board and get them involved. And we have this list of organizations that we've been meaning to reach out to and engage, and we're going to do that right now. And it's because we know to move through this time, we have to do it together. So I think that the fear that comes up often puts our nose right back down on the grindstone, and it feels overwhelming. So sometimes having support to be able to look up and connect the decisions, the very hard decisions we're making today, with that longer-term direction and how we're linking with each other can actually help us move through this successfully.
You know, I was at a forum, it's got to be, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, and we're in Tucson, Arizona, and the University of Arizona is here, and they were going through some major growth, and so there were some of us sitting around a planning table just talking about the issues of change at the university and overall, and I was sitting next to the president of the university, and we were talking about this very issue of scarcity, and so I really like the fact that it has really come to the forefront now where everybody is talking about scarcity and fear, but this is a sector that has lived in scarcity and fear forever. Even when times were good, there were very few organizations that were saying, hey, we're doing great. Everybody was sort of living in that model of scarcity. And so the university was talking about different departments that were sort of warring with each other. And we were talking at this roundtable about that whole issue of how people react when they're feeling that resources are scarce versus when they are reaching out to each other and feeling the strength that comes from the abundance and the interconnectedness. And so I'm sitting next to the university president, and he slips me a note. And I just thought the irony, first of all, of, you know, you're not supposed to pass notes in class, but the university president is slipping me a note. And he slips me a note, and it says, when the feeding trough is empty, the horses nip at each other. And I just thought it was brilliant that when we feel that when we feel that fear and we let the fear be the thing that guides us, then we close in and we only want to focus on our own stuff and we shun everybody else out. And yet we have this, I mean, it's a combination of so many of the different of the Pollyanna principles, because it's not only a feeling of scarcity, which goes opposite to the feeling of strength. It's not only a feeling of competition, which goes opposite to the feeling of interconnectedness. But if you think about it, It is that failure to walk your talk. So you're talking, Elizabeth, about the values that groups are modeling and how that's being perceived. Well, how are we being perceived in the community if we are asking everybody else to be generous but we're closed down? And so it's such a different way, again, of looking at how do we engage and feel that strength versus that tendency to shut down. And as consultants, how do we then pull people out of their fear because they are scared. And our job is to not, you know, sort of wave a magic wand and be the elixir, but our job is how do we pull that out of them and make them see their strengths and focus them on their interconnectedness.
And And I think that's one of the core principles here, is to say this concept of working with organizations and what an opportunity we have right now. Instead of looking at it as, oh, times are tough and the woe is me and the scarcity mindset, but to say to organizations, here is really the opportunity that we have as a community to change. And whether that is change the way we deal with some of the most vulnerable in our community, whether it's an opportunity to really address who we are as a community and what we value as a community, working from that position of strength. And again, it goes into the questions we ask, and not the question of what are your weaknesses as an organization, but instead to ask the question, what are the strengths that we have as a community, and how does your organization add to those strengths as a community, and what are we going to do? So that it's not a question of, oh, geez, what's next, but a question of what now can we do together to make a difference? And I really view this as a big opportunity for communities, for community benefit organizations, and for all of us to look at this moment in time, and we'll be judged by how we respond. And if we respond to it as an opportunity, there's the chance we have to be judged positively someday by how we did this.
Rick, could you share a little bit the story that you were telling me the other day about the guy that came into your office clutching a book?
Yes, we one project we've been working on is the Human Services Federation, in being a group of community benefit organizations, came to the realization that, as we all know, the community benefit sector is not alone in wanting to address some of the most basic issues in our communities, that there are lots of other organizations. We're not in a silo. There are other organizations that we need to connect with and engage with in order to do this. And one of the obvious ones was communities of faith, and all across communities of faith, not just faith-based organizations, but truly congregations, synagogues, communities of faith. And we began to do some outreach opportunities with communities of faith, and really asking the questions of, what all do you see? What all do you have, you know, going on? And one of these gentlemen that I've worked with comes to my office, and under his arm, and I'm going to play a little stereotype here, and I apologize in advance for doing it. So a member of a community of faith comes into my office, and under his arm, he is toting a black book. And of course, my assumption is he is bringing, and knowing what his faith is, he's bringing the Bible under his arm as he comes into my office. Well, as he sits down and lays the book on the table, it's a copy of Pollyanna Principles. And I was like, oh, well, not the Bible I was thinking of. But and what he said to me is he said, I've been reading this, and we need to talk, because, and how he put it is, in my community of faith, we've been so focused on the pews, we have forgotten to look out the doors. Talk about profound. I'm like, that's exactly it. I think as people and organizations and communities look to each other and begin the conversations, it's really to say, we're not in this alone. These problems aren't going to be solved by this organization. They're not going to be solved by the community benefit sector. They're only going to be solved when we all, in all sectors of the community, business community and the faith communities and universities and governments and community benefit organizations come together and say, how do we link arms and work on this thing as a vision for who we are and who we want to be as a community?
All right, I have to jump in with an aha here.
Good.
This is an example of why I love having these connections with each other. When Rick was talking before the great story about the book about the questions that we ask, and about strengths and weaknesses. Okay, that's, you know, doing a SWOT analysis is a very traditional approach of gathering information in a planning process, if we use a planning example. And when we talk about strengths and weaknesses, we talk about, you know, the organization. What are the internal strengths and weaknesses of the organization? The external part is about how it's an opportunity or threat for that organization. And so as you were talking about, when we ask the question, if we start with what is the community success we're aiming for, that assumes, and this actually creates a whole lot of discomfort in groups, I find, when we first start talking this way. They're like, oh my God, why are we talking about the whole world? We can't do that. And I say, that's the point. No, we know you can't do it alone. And what we're doing is we're painting the picture of the community we all share a vision for. And then we're going to say, and what part of this are we best situated and suited and passionate about addressing? And that also then leads to the perfect next question of, and who else is out there who shares that vision that we should be doing it with? So just as you were describing that, Rick, it helped me understand how framing those questions helps organizations both see their piece in the big picture and the importance of connecting with others. So that's my aha for today.
No, it's your aha for the last 5 minutes. I want another one by the end of this call.
You know, we talk about examples of things that are happening and that we've seen in ourselves. There was a wonderful example that was in the news the other day about a Brazilian city that decided to eliminate hunger. And they've been working on this since 93. And at that time, 20% of the children were going hungry, 275,000 people living in absolute poverty. And they basically changed the way they thought about the problem. And as of now, they have virtually eliminated hunger in the city. And I'll include a link later with this story. But it's amazing that they spend 2% of the city budget to do this. And they did things like encouraged local farmers to bring their wares to the city and basically gave them preferential locations within the city in exchange for having a certain portion of their product be available to folks who either at a much lower rate or even for free so that they could help address the hunger issue. The farmers were happy because they got additional resource because they could charge more. They were in prime locations, and it was addressing an issue without necessarily requiring additional funds. It was that way of looking at this, not as what techniques can we use, which they ended up coming up with techniques, but what were we trying to accomplish here? And what they were trying to accomplish was eliminate hunger. So it's a really an amazing story that these examples are real. They can happen.
It's fabulous. And what it comes back to is that the question really is just what you said, Dimitri. It is, what can we accomplish? Because frequently what we're seeing, well, we need to change our resource development or our way of working with community to a strength-based versus a weakness-based. And again, those become, well, okay, if we could just learn 3 or 4 of those strength-based tools and use those, then we'll be okay. What it comes back to is that whole question of let's first be focused on what we want to accomplish. And there's a million tools that will fit into that. It then comes back to that question that we asked maybe a half an hour ago or so, is how does this change what consultants are already doing? Well, a lot of the tools we're already using will still work. It's just that we're changing the reason we're doing them, and we're changing the focus.
Working.
I'm sorry?
They'll start working for the first time, actually.
Well, what they'll start doing is they'll...
We're measuring ourselves by the so what question, right? So they work. Yeah.
Exactly, because quite honestly, if Dimitri and I go back 10 years to when we were doing things the old way in our minds, it was working, clients were happy, they were getting what they asked for, so in our minds, it was working quite well. But it wasn't answering that bigger question, which is the only thing that community-driven work is really asking, which is how can we create the kinds of visionary community change that we all sort of sense in our hearts is possible. And if that's the question that we're asking, then all of the means fall into place and all of those other answers fit into that. I've been doing some work here in Tucson with the arts community. Talk about a feeling of weakness. I mean, arts groups don't feel strong when times are great. And we've been talking about if the arts community all came together, and that's visual artists and performance artists and music and graphic art, if everyone came together, what could Tucson look like? And we're just even going a short ways out because, you know, sometimes we'll do visionary work where we're going, you know, 50 years, 100 years. What do you want your grandkids to inherit? But we're even just talking about in the next 12 months, or as I've been asking on the Facebook discussion that we've been having, we're not always going to be in this recession. Where do we want our community to be poised to be able to do when we get out of this? And how do we aim towards that, and what can we all do together? Well, what it does is it builds that engagement. It builds on those strengths, but it's not for the sake of, well, we need a strength-based approach. It is for the sake of we could be amazing together. We could accomplish amazing if we work together.
And I think that's it. It's a different question to say a local food bank setting itself up for taking a responsibility of ending hunger in a community, and who do you engage with, who becomes part of that question, than it is for a local food bank to say, we should become, instead of a $5 million pound food bank, a $6 million pound food bank. Now, that food bank may need to become a $6 million pound food bank in order to accomplish the ends of ending hunger in a community, but then it is simply a means to the end, and the $6 million pound food bank is not the end in and of itself. And I think every organization being able to say, what is the vision and what part of a community vision can we take a piece of, and then who else do we engage with in order to accomplish this, opens you up to a whole new area of possibilities. We had an example here in Lincoln with a community planning process specifically around the area of human services. And one of the problems that we encountered is when organizations came to the table and we began to say, what are the indicators that this community, you know, what are the outcomes? What do we hold ourselves accountable and how do we measure it? They came with this idea of what they at that time called benchmarks. We've since banned the use of the word benchmark for any kind of planning around human services. What occurred is then every organization said, well, if I don't get every program that I deliver isn't one of the benchmarks that we use to measure progress as a community, then it's a scarcity model, and I'm not going to get funding unless my benchmarks are in there. And so you ended up in the first attempt at the end of the day of 1,000 benchmarks for a community. And to be able to say, you know what, it's not about individually exactly what it is that you do in this conversation, but it's instead to say, what are those community impacts? If we were to say we want to end childhood homelessness in this community, how could we all play a part? And then how do we hold ourselves accountable for that outcome as a community? And how you measure that would be differently. Now, I'm not saying organizations shouldn't track what they do and do those, you know, and do those pieces, but to put them in a context of how do we look at the question differently when we hold ourselves accountable.
And what it does is it acknowledges that we are all part of the solution, and not the only way I can win is if somebody else loses. And that has to do with both self-perception of an organization, because some organizations have come to perceive themselves as, for lack of a better word, government service providers. Rather than the reason you have your tax-exempt status is to provide community benefit, and what is the benefit that you want to provide to the community, rather than if I'm competing with on a contract for somebody, then I got to win and they got to lose. So what you're doing, Rick, is that all of those pieces are going into a bigger puzzle. But it also comes back to that whole issue we've been talking about, which is when we change the way we see things, things start to change. If we start with the end goal in mind, and the end, you know, everybody may have a little bit different picture in their mind of what nirvana would look like. But if we asked community members, do you want a healthy, vibrant, compassionate, resilient community, there is nobody short of the worst curmudgeon in the world that's going to say no. We all want the same thing. If we reverse engineer that, and folks who have watched the video and have read the book know what we're talking about, is that whole working from the end goal backwards to say, we want a community that is vibrant and healthy. Okay, what will that take? And it's that whole issue of cause and effect. And so we start to walk backwards, and we say, well, what it will take is certainly we can't have a vibrant community if people are living on the streets, if they are hungry, if a kid is hungry in school and can't learn. So clearly we would need to have everyone's basic needs met. Okay, so let's walk backwards from there. What will that take? Well, it will take a whole lot of different programs to meet everyone's basic needs. It will take a whole lot of different attitude changes. It will take some legislative changes to meet everybody's basic needs. And we walk, okay, well, what will it take to change those legislative agendas? And what will it take to create plenty among all of our organizations? Well, we would need to get together as organizations, but we would also need to solve our current problems, because right now we are in a state of shortage, and we are, okay, well, that needs to be done too, and then we keep walking backwards. So what we're not doing is we're not negating, we're not saying there are no problems to be solved, and we're not saying that we look at the vision in lieu of today. What we're talking about is the fact that we are on a path, and that part of that path, the beginning of the path, is I got to get around this pothole if I'm going to get 6 miles down the road. But the goal is not the pothole. The goal is what's 6 miles down the road, and then we all work together, and everything fits into that together, integrated, just as you're talking about, Rick, putting it all together so that we get the end goal, but not so that that's the only thing we're focusing on.
I'm just thinking of, Hilde, as you started talking about the all working together piece and the competitive nature, and that it just kind of reinforced in my mind why working with consultants, working with organizations is one piece, but how critically important it will be as the as your work continues with funders and the role that the Institute will play in working with funders in changing that thinking and some of the examples that you've had in that. But helping everyone who's listening recognize that we know that all of these pieces are very interrelated. We live in a world where we are set up to be competitive and that each of the different pieces have to change, although until they do, then we can continue to change ourselves and be modeling the way we think differently and cooperatively. But that there are a lot of constraints to that, it, just in the structures and systems that we face on a day-to-day basis.
I think that that sort of lends itself to the next sort of group of questions that folks had asked a lot about, which is the how does this change the consultant-client relationship and the role of the consultant vis-a-vis the client and vice versa? Because it does dramatically. Somebody calls on the phone and they're saying, how much do you charge to do a strategic plan? I don't answer the question. The first thing I want to know is not, here I've given you my price, that's it. The first thing I want to know is, what are you trying to accomplish, A, with this plan, B, in the community, and how are we working together to figure out how to accomplish those outcomes? I think the way that I work with clients has changed complete 180 from the time before we had this transformation to now. What have you guys found?
Oh, I agree. I think it changes the question not from a consultant as a service provider, but really changes the equation to one where the consultant is a trusted part of the engagement and is a trusted part of helping organizations achieve great outcomes and results for the community. And I think that's a whole different way to do it. We said earlier, the way not to come into this is to say, I'm looking for the new template of how I do an RFP, you know, do a response on what the next strategic planning process for organization X may be. But it's really changing about how do we impact organizations and how are we a partner in that journey for organizations. And it's a trust that develops in that kind of relationship that I think an organization values, a community values, and you as consultants begin to really see the benefit in the value there of being a trusted partner as opposed to a service provider.
One of the things that's been interesting, and Rick, you can feel as free as you want to talk about the stuff that you and I have been talking about separately, is that you and I have been talking about doing some work together with you guys as the client, which is a whole different way of our working together, which we've never done. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about the process? Because it's one thing for me to sort of teach in classes how to approach a client. It's a whole other thing to be able to talk from that client perspective of what that feels like.
Sure, and I think it's part of that example of sometimes we, in this continual learning process, sometimes we have to do what I say and not what I do, because, of course, through this process, one of the first questions I ask Hilde is, so what's this going to cost? And I know better, but, you know, I also get, looking at it from an organizational level, sometimes that is the question, you know, because we haven't really had an opportunity to process what are those impacts and to really see what are the outcomes that we want to create for our community. And instead you're saying, all right, I have a budget. I finally got the board to okay spending some money on a planning process of some sort, and you name the organization that goes through this. And so that's the mindset that you go into the discussion of is, this is good, what's it going to cost me? That's been a challenge for me, and it shows that nobody here has all the answers, but it's being able to be a part of the process to say, really, what are those? And that's where I appreciate Hilde in kind of helping me process as opposed to being fixated on that. And really for Lincoln, it's about saying, if we want to create a vibrant community benefits sector, what do we need? Well, we need a vibrant community. And what would that look like? And we've had some great partnerships develop here through, again, it's with faith communities, it is with funders in this community, it's with government officials in this community, because, and this links back, I guess, to some of those other pieces, we all may have our distinct opinion of a vision for our community, but when we can come together and have a conversation and we can start from a moment of agreement and consensus around a theory, you know, I guess from my political world, I never doubted that my opponent in a political campaign or the opposing campaign manager in a political campaign really had their vision of a good community at heart. Now, how we both wanted to go about creating a great community was different. But, you know, I can always respect the idea that we all want to create a great community. And I think that's it about this whole conversation that Hilde and I have had, and that is if what we're going to hold ourselves accountable for in Lincoln is to create a great community in Lincoln, and we know that being a part of a great community is having a great community benefit sector, what would that look like? The process for me is where the real value is, and it's not saying to Hilde, send me the template of what you've done for this anywhere else and let me cut and paste away on it. No, it's the value in being able to hear the questions, ask myself the question, and then have permission and giving myself permission to not know the answer right away. And I think that's been one of the challenges for me, is going into community meetings, thinking what I would like to do or what I would like to see the outcome. And where Hilde has benefited me is saying, give yourself permission to not blurt out what you think the answer should be, but instead to let the group develop the answer. And therein lies the value in all of this.
It has been fun to watch how many times, and Rick, you are among them now that we've been talking in a very different relationship in terms of me being the consultant, quote-unquote, and you being the client, quote-unquote. I can't tell you how many times folks will call me and say, we need this, what would you charge? And I ask them, can you tell me when we are all done with this project, how will you know, what are you going to measure success on? How will you know this project has been successful? It's the first thing I'm going to ask. It's the first thing I asked you. What are the outcomes out of this that you want to have changed by the time we're done? And I can't tell you how many people come back and say, oh, geez, you were supposed to answer all the questions. You're not supposed to give me questions back.
Yeah, I'm thinking about how that applies. I mean, I love the way that we're thinking at the community-wide level, and I'm also thinking of the examples that tie back to the really concrete smaller pieces of an individual organization's operations and how that also fits in about how it's changed my relationship with clients on, we've talked a lot about planning examples. Mm-hmm. And so I'm also thinking about, I do a lot of outcomes measurement work. The philosophy is very consistent with participatory evaluation. And I'm thinking of conversations where people do that. They call and say, we need to do this kind of evaluation. How much will it cost? And then going into the conversation about, well, what's your intention about how you use data within your organization? What change are you trying to create? And it all connects to the organization's total path. And what I've found over time is that the relationships that I build with clients are lasting in a way that has been true in the past, but it's increasingly true. I also find that, Rick, you mentioned RFPs. RFPs just are not a way to be able to connect and build a relationship and make a decision that this is that elusive, good consulting client fit. I find too often that when you fill out, you know, you put together some kind of wonderful RFP, and then there's no shared decision making. And you've sent in information, and somebody reviews it, and they interview you because it's a one-way interview. And then if we decide we like you, then you're doing this project. And so now, if I'm focusing much more on relationship building and getting a clear understanding of where we're headed and having that permission to not know the answers, because first we have to figure out the right questions, that whole process is changing. I'm very interested in seeing how communities are changing the way they use their selection process to be able to incorporate more of this. So I think that's some of the change that's ahead for us.
That whole issue of fit, we've talked a lot about that in our larger group of advisors. What it does is it changes the clients that you start working with, because there are folks who really do just want the widget and they want to know how much it's going to cost.
And they'll find people that are a good fit. I mean, that's the need at the time. And I think we also talk about meeting folks where they are at the time. And within organizations, you'll find there are some people who are open and ready and some people who have further to go in the path. And I think at an organizational level, that's also true. There are some organizations that really need consultants as a helping hand at that moment. Mm-hmm. And that could be a perfectly appropriate role and filling a need and getting them from step A to step B. And that can be a very valuable contribution. I personally am making careful choices about which kinds of roles I'm taking on because of the way that I want to be using my professional time. So,
well, because this gives you the option to do that. This gives you
an awareness about it.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing that we have found as we're doing this, and Rick, you are experiencing, is that I'm not creating a proposal and giving it to you and it's a surprise to you. That we're creating the outcomes together, we're creating the scope of work together, that we're focusing first on what do you want the impact of this work to be, even if it is a resource development plan, even if it is governance work for your board. Your board is not there because they like balance sheets. Your board is there because they want to make a difference. So once all of that is in that initial conversation with the client, then you're building excitement from the start because that's the reason they got into the work they're doing also. So you're building that excitement and building the, wow, we could, through this governance work, actually create that kind of difference. That's very cool. So as you're building that excitement and you're working on the outcomes together and you're building the scope of work together, you are you're A, seeing if that fit is there, B, you're building the trust that Rick was talking about, and C, more importantly, you are eliminating, and I'll be just blunt, you're eliminating all the other consultants from consideration. So where they may have said, we're going to talk to 3 or 4 people, you're the only ones that are asking these questions. Until everything obviously changes and everybody's working like this, and then we'll see where that goes. But at this point now, in terms of where folks are in their practice, it has been very fun for us that it changes the conversation. And you wind up working in very, very different ways, and you wind up working collaboratively, I find, with other consultants an awful lot.
Oh, I agree. And I think that I chuckled a little bit as you were saying that, because the image that kept coming to me, or the statement, is you're not providing that same standard strategic plan response that you've pretty much sent to 15 other organizations that have put out the RFP, but instead, gee, wow, you are actually engaging this organization in the discussion, and wow, modeling the behavior that you're then going to take to that organization and say, now how do we engage others? And it really goes back to the basis of all of this, and that's, you know, be the change that you're talking about in the community. And if you're going to do that, you have to build your consultancy on engagement from the ground up.
And you're right. One of the reasons that we've talked so much among us about it's not the bag of tricks, it's the way you see yourself in relation to your community and the impact you want to have your consulting practice have on the community, because it is learning how do you walk your talk within your consulting practice and model in your consulting work what you want the clients to do.
Yes.
So if I want a client to focus on outcomes and I want a client to be building something collaboratively, you're absolutely right. But it really is being able to point back at that. So if you're having interviews with board members and saying, what would success look like? The more board members say, you know, nobody's ever asked me that question, woohoo, we're doing okay.
Well, and I'm just remembering the time we had the conversation, and we were several consultants asking Hilde, you know, picking your brain about how does this work, and trying to break down every step, just like you were just saying, I didn't realize they did that. And one of the moments when we realized, you do all of this before you've given a quote. And
yeah.
So that means you're certainly not generating an invoice for this phase.
Right.
And so talk about trust. I mean, that's where you're building relationship because you have a passion for the work of the sector and for these individual organizations. You care about them. You learn about them. Some of them end up being very long engagements that are wonderful. Some of them you have modeled and taught them something that in another year or 10 years, it might be an aha. That's what she was talking about. And that may come back to you or to the, you know, someone else who's doing that kind of work. Or it may not lead to anything, but you're doing it because of the conversation, not because you can bill hours against it. And I think that's a big trust.
And here's what winds up happening. I'll give you the reality that comes out of it. It's not been our intent, because I seem to be, as my business partner reminds me all the time, real good at giving away my time. But I think we all have.
Elizabeth, thank you for bringing this up.
Well, I'll tell you, my life partner also says that to me.
I think we all could easily be accused of this. But here's the reality of what winds up happening out of this. because of the approach that we're taking, because we're building it collaboratively, because we're focusing on what are the real outcomes you want out of this. Yeah, you want your board to understand their role in governance better, or you want them to stop micromanaging, or you want them to whatever. But what would it look like if your board were successfully governing towards community impact and community benefit? When you start having that and you're elevating that discussion, the project gets bigger. So where you started out with what do you charge for a strategic plan, you moved into, well, we don't have any resources. We don't have any resources, so what we really need is a fund. Maybe you think we need a fundraising plan then. What would you charge for that? Okay, so let's keep going. What's going on with resources? Well, the board is really holding us back when it comes to X, and we just aren't communicating well. Okay, tell me about how your board is working. And now we start working on what is the board focusing on? What are they spending their time on? By the time we're done, we've really finally gotten, and this could be several conversations, but we finally started to get to the heart of things. Then, as you're saying, Elizabeth, you're absolutely right. I'm having a next conversation that is also not on the clock, and it may be with the board president, and it may be a conference call with three or four board members, but we're again going through the what does it look like if things are successful? What do you see as the issues? By the time we're done, we have built a project that is significantly, A, different, and B, bigger than what they thought they could afford to start with. But what it does is it brings in the possibility of very different funding for that project. So where they said, we've got $2,000 in the budget, what can you do for that? Now they're starting to think about a very different project, which brings a very different mindset in terms of how does one fund that.
I want to make just a side note here. Hildy mentioned that this is on a live Twitter feed, and Nick in our office has been tweeting this. And for the folks who happen to be interested, I just want to very quickly tell you how to get to it, and then you can kind of follow along what he's doing, because he's basically doing a quick synopsis of parts of the conversation and posting it.
And he's stressing out while he's doing
it. Yes, he sent us a little note that says he's totally stressed out doing it. So if you're interested, it's at http://twitter.com/community-driven. So the key part is twitter.com/community-driven, and you'll be able to see and follow what's been going on from the perspective of a new social networking tool. Even though we're not really talking about tools, this is what a lot of people are using now to communicate. So I just wanted to pass that on as an aside.
And to connect and engage. There's also a hashtag set up for Twitter folks. There's a hashtag set up at CD Consult, so you can watch the conversation there as well. We are, like, so with it. For old people, we're so with it.
I was just giving a shout-out to Nick for doing this. This is very awesome.
Nick is amazing. Okay. We all need to give one big woo-hoo for Nick. One of the other questions that we keep getting as Institute folks is, why are we focusing the first curriculum we're developing on consultants? Why aren't we out there teaching boards? Why aren't we out there teaching organizations, doing community workshops? And really, for us, it was important that this first curriculum focus on consultants, because consultants are sort of the Johnny Appleseeds of the sector, that we are in lots of organizations, we're teaching, we're helping, we're sharing the, and I hate this word, but we're sharing what we consider to be best practice. And so we have the ability, one organization at a time, but working with many organizations, to create change pretty quickly. And so if our goal is to change the way the sector does its work, we know that the very, very first folks to get that out there and inculcate that into the communities are consultants. The other thing that it does is it brings back more that we can learn together, because as there's more consultants out there doing this work, and Elizabeth, you've used the word learning community an awful lot. I want to share with folks that aren't already involved to some extent with the Institute's programs what that means. We are building this Institute as not only a teaching organization, but more as a learning organization. We want to develop new ways of thinking and being. And if you read this in the Pollyanna Principles, what you'll see several times is I said, I'm not saying that this is the way to do things, that it's a way to do things. And the more we can build different ways of doing things and build on that knowledge and do research and have folks bringing back their experience and sharing with each other, then we're creating something that's really, really powerful together that creates sort of that supportive space. And so we're building these programs around the format of a learning community and several learning communities and lots of learning communities and then sort of integrated learning communities among them. But that's a really key part of this is the folks that are listening have heard several times during just this conversation, all of us talking about how wonderful it's been for us to have this group, this advisory group that we're all bouncing because we're all practitioners. We're all out there doing the work to have it to bounce around and that's a really key part of what we're trying to build here.
One of the things, and I'm just so excited about having this community and connection, and I completely enter it as a learner, and okay, Hilda, here's the other aha. I just made a connection to one of the reasons that I am so drawn to this is parallel to the way that I make proposals to make presentations for workshops at conferences, is that I think about the conference, I think about who will be there, and then I think about the question that I most want to get everybody's input on, because I know that there's a really smart group of people coming. And instead of making a proposal for a presentation of something that I'm telling everyone that I have the answers, I design a workshop that builds on the questions that I want to answer. That is what this group is for me. It's the place where I am testing out and sharing all of my cutting-edge questions as I'm in practice and getting lots of support and feedback in doing that. As an independent consultant, you know, it varies depending on what structure you fit into in the world of providing support to the sector. But as an independent consultant who, you know, literally sits here in an office by myself in my beautiful backyard, it is critically important for me to have ongoing connections with colleagues. And I know that's true for others, either who are within firms, because firms often create that structure and intellectual support and stimulation within the firm, but it's also great to be able to do it across organizations and to connect individuals. So that's a huge benefit for me. Thank you.
Well, it happens when we change the way we're thinking about things. And, you know, I frequently say that there's no faith tradition in the world that will say, you know, here's the Ten Commandments, go off, read them, and you're good for the next 50 years. Don't bother coming back. We know that when we are changing the way we see and think and be in the world, which is what every faith tradition is about, is having us rise to our higher selves, we know that we need reinforcement all the time. And whether that means that we're going to church once a week, whether that means we're in Bible study three times a week, whether that means we're sitting in meditation three times a day, whether it means that we're touching back with a group, we're continually coming back together to learn and bounce things off of each other as we're changing the way we're thinking and being in the world. And none of us are the gurus. I mean, that's the fun part about this, is that we're all learning together. The work this sector is doing, nobody's ever done before on the scale we're talking about doing it. The quote at the beginning of the Pollyanna Principles from Arnold Toynbee, talking about the fact that the 20th century is going to be remembered as the first time we see the welfare of the whole human race as a practical objective. That's never happened before. So for us to create a way of being in that as consultants, as a sector, we do need each other, and we need a supportive learning environment for that, and it's so exciting. I have one more question for you guys. If you had one thing you would want to see people take out of this call and put into action, what might one thing you can think of be? Now you're on the spot.
The one trick.
Yeah, one trick. Or one question, or one thing to think about.
I guess one of them for me is to, and it alludes to where you're talking about it, the learning community, and that's, I appreciate nothing more than being surrounded by people smarter than me, and that's one of the things that I think to take out of this is to know that you're not alone in this journey, that there are a lot of people who are on, you know, different ends of the spectrum and where they've begun this journey, and there is no end to this journey. But to know that you're not alone on that as you think about how as a consultant, how as a practitioner, that we help create these kinds of community impacts, just to know that there are other people who struggle with those same questions and who struggle with it in a variety of different ways, whether it's a process-based way or an emotional way. I mean, that's one of the things is I've seen people look at this and respond with their brain and say, well, this doesn't make sense, or this does make sense, or to say, this will change how I process things. And others respond to it with their hearts. It's been unbelievable to me to see fundamental changes in people emotionally by talking about being, you know, the change that we talk about, and to walking that talk. And I guess that would be mine, is to know you're not alone, that there are lots of folks, all of us out here, who are here to support one another, who are here to talk to one another, who are here to process with each other, and, you know, to just be here for each other.
And to not make fun of us for being a bunch of Pollyannas.
Exactly. It's okay to be Pollyanna.
All hail.
All hail Pollyanna.
All hail Pollyanna. we have our new faith. Elizabeth?
Well, I mean, to support that, I would love to be able to have clear place or step for all of us to continue the conversation. I want to hear the yeah buts that people are thinking. I want to hear the ahas that have been happening and the suggestions and ideas for next steps to be able to continue the conversation. And so Hilde and Dimitri have a rich mix of ways that they have built this virtual community. And so I wonder where in that array we will be able to do that. It's happening everywhere. You know, it's your blog,
these days,
site.
These days my answer to everything is Twitter. So, you know, but tomorrow it could be something else, because technology will change faster and we can spin around.
You know, I think that the thing to take away that strikes me about this, and it's something that I've been basically working on myself a lot, is taking the time to reflect and to kind of go back and look at what we're doing. And some of what makes that even more effective is to have a continual amount of feedback coming back from folks, and this is exactly what you've been talking about. How do you improve what you're doing? How do you become more effective at who you are? One of the ways is how other people see you, and we often don't see that. We often don't see what we're doing and how effective we are at what we're doing. And being in an environment where that you're comfortable asking the question, folks, that the answer you're going to get is one that is compassionate and patient, makes you better at what you are. And I have found that that has been an important part of what keeping this process flexible and not rigid, and by that I mean it's not a series of tricks or, you know, this is exactly how you do something. It is flexible and moldable to the individual who is involved in this, and what they have to offer is valuable. Our early work was in Indian country, where you never knew what somebody knew until you asked them. And sometimes you were totally surprised what they had to offer in a process. And it was a real learning experience for us to change ourselves to be more open and to not just be the expert, because we were coming in as the expert, to realize that the experts are in the room. You're one of them, but you're not the only ones there. So, you know, I would offer the reflection and the feedback as being really important things that you can take away here.
Man, I could talk for a whole other hour about just reflection and about the power of that in our consulting practices. So we'll just have to save that for another time. If I had one thing come out of, just one thing you learned, if I had one question, one action step that somebody might take as a next step, find a question that you can ask that you want answered out of everything you do in the day. As I'm writing this proposal, what is the biggest question that I can have this proposal answer? I'm going to have an interview today, or I'm going to have a client talk today, what is the most important question that I can ask that will aim at a vision for the community's potential? And that really is what moves us beyond being tool-based, being tactic-based, being I've got my three planning methods that I use and they work all the time-based, versus having our work be more generative and based on a vision for the community's potential and having all the stuff that we do build around that. And so if I had one wish for folks to start thinking about out of the call, that would be where I would love to see folks, is to move their thinking away from, well, I've got the tools to do that, and move their thinking more towards, how do I root everything I'm doing, every question I'm asking, every interaction I'm having, how do I root that in our vision for the community's potential? I can't believe this time has gone as fast as it's gone. I know that the four of us could probably stay on the line and talk for another 2 days. We've actually done that. We have done that indeed. But we really see the Community-Driven Institute's role as creating and maintaining an inspiring and encouraging and practical ongoing learning environment where folks can bring what they find in their practice into that environment and grow with us and from that and take that back out to doing that practical work. And so to all of you who are on this call today, we thank you. We hope you will join us because we're going to continue to seek to change the way our sector does its work, to make visionary community and global change practical and doable in your community and all around the world. So thank you to Rick and Elizabeth and Dimitri, and especially to Nick, who's been in the background doing all his stuff. And thank you to all of you on this call.
Thanks.
Thank you, Hilda.
Thank you.
Okay.